Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Since moving to Cape Cod, the return of ospreys has become one of my favorite signs of spring, right up there with the first crocuses. I can never quite shake the feeling that their mere presence is a near miracle. After all, they were vanishingly rare when I first learned about DDT as a teen, so now their recovery stands out as a welcome conservation success story. Alan Poole is an associate at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and he's spent 35 years studying ospreys. He says we've learned a lot about these birds over the past few decades. His new book is Ospreys, The Revival of a Global Raptor. Alan, thanks for joining me.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So ospreys are actually a globally distributed bird, and I'm most familiar with the story of North American ospreys, DDT, to some extent, hunting, causing a decline, and then their recovery over the past few decades. What about the rest of the globe? I mean, was there a global decline, or is that really just a North American story?
There was a global decline, but not as severe in Europe as it was in the U.S., in North America. And that's partly because pesticides were not used as heavily. Ospreys there were living in remote forests where they were not as impacted by pesticides. So their population stayed more robust there, although they were knocked back. But for most of Europe, particularly England, Scotland, France, Southern Europe, Germany, Spain, and Portugal, their ospreys were basically hunted to extinction. They were seen as vermin. They were seen as birds that were competing for fish that people wanted for themselves. Backyard fish ponds. Europe was full of fish ponds.
Really?
And ospreys, needless to say, are smart about finding fish. And if there's a fish pond in the backyard, they're there.
They're going to find it, yeah.
And that went on for centuries. And so it was a gradual wearing down of the populations.
And has the revival, because certainly we don't seem to have a shortage of ospreys here in New England at this point. You did name the book The Revival of a Global Raptor. So have they come back globally? And how?
They have. And that's the fascinating story. And that's what makes, for me, one of the things that makes ospreys so interesting is we're seeing these populations coming back all over the globe. But what you have, of course, are these northern birds leave in the wintertime and they go to the southern hemisphere. So the osprey is particularly a global species when you look at its wintering sites around the world. So, for instance, ospreys in Massachusetts or Quebec or Wisconsin are going to go to South America, to the Amazon, anywhere from Peru or Colombia to Venezuela. And in Europe, an osprey from Sweden or from Scotland or from Russia would end up in Africa.
Okay, so that's kind of their general range. And we were talking about how they've declined. How did they manage to come back, whether it was from hunting or from pesticides? I mean, that's no mean feat.
It's no mean feat. And it's a fascinating story in changing human cultures is really what it's all about. In our case, we were able to get pesticides banned, particularly the DDT, which was the critical element in the osprey's decline. In Europe, it was hunting and shooting and trapping. It's really that simple. People stop shooting ospreys.
I mean, that's pretty amazing in and of itself, because I think we hear increasingly that, you know, you can put an endangered species onto a list and stop hunting it or ban a chemical and stop exposing an animal to a chemical. But that doesn't always mean it will come back, that we might need to actually get in there and do something to help a species come back. I mean, did the ospreys come back on their own?
They came back on their own. The European story is a particularly interesting one because they recolonized a lot of areas in Northern Europe, particularly in England and Scotland, pretty much on their own. But yes, they were given a helping hand along the way. And the main way that they got a helping hand was with nest sites. Ospreys are remarkably adaptable in their choice of nest sites. Here in the U.S., here in New England, we see them nesting on phone poles, on cell towers, on buoys and harbors. They're able to find places to nest. They like high, isolated areas. And this has been one of the secrets of their success. It made a big difference here. In Europe, what's happened are people have been building nest platforms for them. We do that here as well, particularly on our salt marshes. But there, it's a question more of retrofitting trees that ospreys are trying to nest in cutting the top out of it, maybe putting a little platform in the top of it so that it provides a safe, stable nest site. Once the ospreys have that, they're good to go. They're going to crank out young year after year after year, and that's the secret to a regenerating population.
So, Alan Poole, are the populations of ospreys at this point, if we look around the globe, pretty much back to what we would say was, I don't know, the historical, is there such a thing as a baseline or a normal population level?
There is. There is very much a baseline for North America. I mean, it's a somewhat vague baseline, but it's a pretty good one. And we know for our area here that ospreys have at least reached that baseline in most areas and gone beyond it. Here in New England, for instance, here in Massachusetts, we had in the area between New York City and Boston, which is an area that I and my colleagues have looked at particularly carefully, ospreys went from about 1,000 breeding pairs in the 1940s and 50s down to 90% decline in those, basically in the 1950s and 60s. And they are now up over 1,200 pairs in that area.
That's pretty remarkable. How much has our understanding of ospreys actually changed in the intervening years? How much have we learned about these birds?
We've learned a tremendous amount about osprey migration, and that's thanks to the new satellite tracking technology. You can put a solar-powered backpack transmitter on an osprey and have that communicate with a satellite and then back to our computers, our desktop computers, and you can follow an osprey day by day, sometimes hour by hour, in its flights from, say, Maine to the central Amazon.
I mean, you can put that backpack on this bird that is flying thousands of miles and it doesn't slow it down, weigh it down, cause it problems?
It doesn't. They seem to adjust quite well to that. And the young ones, we've learned a fantastic amount about the migration. I mean, think of this. Ospreys are doing these long-term, long-distance migrations as young birds right out of the egg on their own. They don't travel. They're not like geese. They don't travel with a family. It's every osprey for itself. And they're out there launching into the unknown, tracking their way across parts of the Atlantic, flying through Florida, down through Cuba, and then across the Caribbean from Cuba, Hispaniola. And that's a flight that's anywhere from 30 to 40 hours. So flying all night long, knowing where they're going in the dark.
How do they do that? How do they know where they're going? I mean, I have to say, I always have a little bit of like a pang of sympathy in the fall when I see the adults leave and the juveniles are still there. And it's like you said, oh my God, they're young
right.
birds and they're totally on their own.
Right.
How do they find out where they're supposed to go?
Maybe they're saying, Mom, where are you? they're gone. The parents are gone. And the young at that point have been carefully nourished by the parents keep feeding them for at least a month after the young learn how to fly. And then you're absolutely right. They wake up one morning and their father, who is the one that actually stays on later and feeds them, is gone, and they have the capacity to migrate. It comes with the genes. It comes with them out of the egg, as is true for all of, you know, many, many other birds that are doing similar long-distance migrations. Nothing short of incredible. We think there's a very good evidence that they are using some sort of magnetic cues, using the Earth's magnetic fields to guide their trips, particularly across open water.
Alan Poole, as you look at the various threats, I mean, the book is called The Revival of a Global Raptor, and we've talked about what the species has already recovered from, but you also write about all the different potential threats. Human development, as adaptable as they are, can still be a threat. Potentially climate change, plastics, all sorts of things. Are you optimistic about the future of ospreys? Are you concerned? What's the trajectory that they seem to be on right now?
Given what we've seen in the last 20 or 30 years, it's hard not to be optimistic about ospreys. And that's one of the delights of studying this bird. Here is a good news story, which we desperately need in the planetary wildlife perspective, a bird that's been able to make remarkable comebacks in many different parts of the world, partly because it can live so close together with humans. It's not easily deterred from its nest by having activity nearby. It habituates really quickly to human activity. That's the key to ospreys. If I worry about any ospreys, I worry about ospreys in parts of the world where they aren't making a recovery, and there are some. Parts of Eastern Europe, Poland, for instance, which is full of fish farms, has a very poorly regulated wildlife departments that have jurisdiction over wildlife. So ospreys continue to be shot in parts of Eastern Europe, Poland in particular. Our ospreys, ours being North America, New England in particular, are wintering in parts of South America where essentially small backyard fish farms are proliferating. Great source of protein for humans. It's totally understandable that people want to raise fish. But these fish farms are magnets for ospreys, and they're there in a flash. And you shoot one, and another one shows up. And you shoot that one, and another one shows up. We know from studies in South America that some fish farms are killing hundreds of ospreys a winter. But looked at from our perspective, this is terrible. We don't want to lose any ospreys. But looking at New England and seeing growth rates of 5 to 10% a year in our part of the world in terms of the breeding populations, I think it's fair to say that these are not having a major impact on the overall population of ospreys here in North America. We've got a lot of ospreys.
And that's great news. Alan Poole has studied ospreys in New England for 35 years. His new book is Ospreys, the Revival of a Global Raptor. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. You can always connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.